irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Well, 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 good morning. It's almost afternoon. Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Marvin Smith, along with my good friend, Alan Cardoza. I think he's still my friend after last week. Are we still friends, Alan?
Absolutely.
Okay, okay. Well, anyway, as we go forward, you know, each week we will bring you guests that will inspire, educate, and in some cases, outright entertain you, while we bring you answers and options to raising children today in a constantly changing future. We will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and much, much more. With each of us having over 30 years experience working with families in crisis, we've been fortunate. Haven't we been very fortunate, Alan?
We are fortunate every day that we live. We are fortunate.
Driving in this morning, I was just thinking, I said, you know, it is so, it's such a blessing to be able to wake up this morning. You know, in church we use this term, I woke up clothed in my right mind. Otherwise, I'm not insane yet. According to the NFL, I got some issues cognitively, but we won't go there. So anyway, you know, with 30 years of experience, this has been great and being fortunate to work with some very unique individuals, top professionals in the field, in the helping fields, and authors sharing valuable stories and helpful information who are working to keep your family, Alan, my family, and all our listeners' families mentally, physically, and spiritually sound. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely.
And they're making this place, this world, I'm not in outer space yet, a better place for all of us. We will continue to bring you some of these top stories, some of these top incredible individuals who are talented and caring people each week as we bring you, once again, Answers for the Family.
Thank you, Marvin. It is so glad to be back. And again, everybody that's been out there listening, it sounds like from the way that Marvin started this that he may have thrown me under the bus a couple of times last week when I wasn't here. But that's okay. I am glad to be back. This is something that I take great joy in, and it's glad to be here with you, Marvin.
Well, Alan, it's always great when we can be in the studio together and just, I can look across the table and go, man, I've been knowing you for 30 years.
Yep.
And I don't know what it is. I don't know. You're looking younger these days. Your hair is turning black. I don't know what's going on here, but
I'm reversing the process. Well, I'm getting younger.
Whatever it is, I need to come hang out with you so I can reverse my process.
Yeah, and again, for those that that have not seen Marvin, you need to understand that he is also very youthful looking as well. So let's go right into the topic. And our topic for today is transforming your dining hall meals into gourmet feasts. Now, many of us as parents have children that are either in high school or in college, and we hear the stories from them about, you know, they're not really eating well or they're not getting good grades or whatever. And our guest today has written a new book that can sort of help that, to help them not only find the right meals that please them, but also something that's healthy and keeps them thinking so that they're getting the job done at school. Now, the new book is called Ultimate Dining Hall Hacks, and it offers 75 amazing and creative recipe ideas that use items readily available in your college or high school dining hall. So, Marvin, tell us a little bit about when you were in college. What were some of your dining hall experiences?
Wow, Alan, college. Jeez, that's a... I don't know if I can remember that. I wasn't that long ago. You keep forgetting, too. You know, remember, I was a linebacker, so when I was in college, I was on a full scholarship to play football. And I was very fortunate, and I was an honor student as well. So if time serves me well and not listening to the reports, they said never read the reports. Never read what's the saying in sports? Never read your own press.
Yes. Read your own reviews.
Yes, yes. According to what the NFL was saying, you know, all former players have, cognitive brain damage. And I got to be careful not to believe that stuff.
That's
But anyway, dining hall. I recall, man, that as an athlete, I mean, that was the place to be. I mean, you ate what you wanted to eat. I mean, you just there was no, I call it rhyme or reason why. You just whatever you felt like. And then being an athlete, we were kind of told kind of stay within the mainframe of certain things to eat, you know. And then, you know, when you're young, you're trying to grow physically strong and healthy. Now my older, these years, great, you know, eating healthy is a way of, it keeps you vibrant as well. But as I look back, I mean, I was pretty much always health conscious. But I can't say that for some of my friends who would just, we used to call them, they love seafood. And what that meant was if they saw it, they would eat it. They see what they eat, seafood, and that's not always healthy. So I don't know. What about you? I mean, your days in college. I mean, you're a healthy person now, and I you know, when we go out to restaurants and stuff, I watch how you eat, and we kind of look at salads, and that's what we do.
Right. I think I've always tried to live by sort of the 80-20 rule. 80% of the time, try to eat things that are healthy, and 20% of the time, eat whatever you want, and that way you're not guilty. You don't have that guilt, because the guilt will hurt you as much as the bad food.
Okay. So, state of mind, yes.
Yes. Yes, yes, absolutely.
That's good.
So now our guest today is Priya Krishna, and she grew up in Dallas, Texas, and she's a recent graduate of Dartmouth College, and where she became adept at assembling meals from the a la carte items available at the dining hall. Through her weekly column, she then started to write about these things that she was putting together and put them in the school newspaper. Now, Priya has contributed to the Small Kitchen College website. She's wrote a dining hall column for the Dartmouth. And in 2012, she was an intern at the Food Network, where she wrote daily content for, quote, the Dish blog and other parts of the website. Now, she currently works for Lucky Peach, a quarterly journal of food and writing. So, Priya, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Hey, me. It's good to be here.
Hey, Priya, this is Marvin. It sounds like you're becoming looking at, you know, where you started and where you're going, a food critic.
I don't know. Being a food critic stresses me out. I know how much I've been on both sides, where chefs where there are restaurant critics giving criticism and chefs getting criticism, and I feel like I have a really large guilty complex about if I wrote a really bad review of a place.
You have a conscience, huh?
Yeah, I guess so. A really bad one.
Well, you know, why don't you tell us a little bit about what inspired you to take on this challenge?
Yeah, I mean, when I came to college, I guess I didn't really know what I wanted to do or what activities I wanted to do. I loved writing. I loved food. And I wanted to write about food in a way that would be accessible to the students. And I realized that every student was, you know, basically bound to eat at the dining hall. They all were forced to purchase some kind of meal plan. But people got really sick of it, because dining halls, no matter how good they are, it's kind of like a restaurant that you have to eat at every single day.
Yes.
So I thought, you know, why not come up with different ways each week that students can spice up the ingredients that they're already paying for, and the concept really stuck among the student body.
Which makes a lot of sense, because as I think about it, I mean, when you have access to the dining hall, you can recall, when you come in as a freshman, it's almost like, oh my gosh, look at all of this. And then after about a month, it's like, ugh. What's going on Monday? Oh, they're having my favorite pancakes on Tuesday. I've got to make sure I get up in the morning and go get that. You know, so we start kind of looking at things we like and miss certain dining hall for, you know, things we don't like. So I think what you're doing, I think, is really good, because it gives that variety, that option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
In fact, I was going to share with you that I have a senior in high school that this summer toured the University of Hawaii, and he says that that's where he wants to go. And he just told me after going over your book with me, and he said, Dad, I've got this great idea to make money. He said, at the University of Hawaii, he said, the cafeteria is really far from you know, from where the dorms are. He said, so I want to set up this business to where I can go in and use some of the ideas that Priya has in the book to put together different types of things that they can order through me, and I can upcharge it and charge a delivery charge, you know. So,
that's not a bad idea.
Yeah, you know, and I thought that's great, but you know, that's that entrepreneurial spirit. But so you have young people now reading your book and saying, I think I can figure out how to help pay my way through school.
Yeah, exactly.
So
that's awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that I remember is that, you know, it seemed like we didn't eat that well, in the sense that we kind of loaded up on a lot of carbs and stuff, but there wasn't a lot of things that were really, you know, that healthy. You know, we were rushing from class to class, so you'd grab the things that were, you know, that you could eat quickly, or the things that would fill you up right away. And so describe for us today, you know, what is the average college student's meal plan that you talk about in the book, and how can they improve upon it?
I mean, yeah, I think what you hit on is a really important point. I think 5-10 years ago, you walk into the average college dining hall and, you know, the options are choose from 3 entrees, and if none of those 3 entrees appeal to you, then you're, you know, out of luck. But in today's world, that's no longer an option. Now colleges have to expand their a la carte ingredients, so ingredients that students can take and customize and, you know, make their own. I think that this idea of customization is something that you see in dining halls across the board. Now there are grill stations where you can choose your own veggies and rice and get it all stir-fried for you, or a panini station where you can make your own sandwich. So the dining halls of today sort of give students all of the tools they need to construct their own dishes that are made according to their own individualized tastes and dietary preferences. Just because college students are taking a much larger interest in food early on, and two, college students and just, you know, students of that age in general have a lot more individualized dietary preferences that can't be met by just having 3 standardized entrees every single day.
Wow. Man, am I outdated? I recall the 3 entrees, but all this other stuff. I'm sitting there looking at Alan, going, "Really, really?" That sounds like the training table.
I think that people overlook dining halls, but in my opinion, I think they're one of the most innovative eating establishments of the past 10 years.
Wow. Well, and I guess, you know, looking at, if you want to look at it, your marketplace being students, and you want to keep them there and attract them and make it, you know, because now when, you know, kids, you know, when you start looking at, you know, being very entrepreneurial and having options, you know, they're looking at what's around them. And if the dining hall is not getting it done, they're going to figure out some kind of way to get it done.
Yeah, exactly.
So let me ask you this question now. When it comes to, I think about, you know, a poor diet can affect academic performance. Was this part of the factor in your desire for this project?
I think that the idea of, you know, building a better, more like holistic college student definitely factored into it. I think that it's books like these that I wouldn't say that my book promotes, like, explicitly is a health-oriented book. But I think the idea of being mindful of what ingredients are going into your body every single day and changing it up, not eating pizza every single day for lunch, are all sort of steps towards a more like healthy and holistic college experience in general. I think that, you know, eating well in full reinforces having a really, you know, healthy social life and being intellectually stimulated and being focused in the classroom. So I think, you know, all of it definitely reinforces the other thing.
Yeah, and maybe you might not have been thinking about that directly because, you know, I'm always fascinated with all the new research and the studies in, you know, in the world of neuroscience and how, you know, we talk about neuroplasticity and how the brain can change and grow and neural synapses, all this technological stuff about the brain. But in actuality, what food does, and just what you just said, Pasha, about the consciousness of it, thinking, because part of the process, once we start to change the habit, how we think, then all of a sudden our brain is changing along with that. And then once you give it the nutrition it just, you know, solidifies and codifies that the factor of, you know, growing those new synapses. And so it's really healthy. It really does affect the brain. So, like I said, maybe you weren't thinking about it directly, but boy, you hit the nail right on the head when you in doing so.
One of the things that I was thinking about while we were talking about that was some of the friends that I had when she mentioned about pizza. That some of the friends that I had, where the concept of pizza was the fact that we were getting that, you know, the night after partying, so that they had something to soak up to soak up the alcohol, so they could make it to that 8 o'clock class.
Right.
So, you know what? Why don't we take a break right now? We will go to commercial, and we will be back in 1 minute. Stay with us.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. I'm Alan Cardoza. With me is Marvin Smith. And we were talking a little bit about
diet
and such. And Marvin was talking about the fact that with there's so much information now out there about the different ways in which eating properly helps the brain and helps us to be able to take in more information and retain more information. So is that something that you have found as well?
Yeah, definitely. Whenever, for me, eating breakfast is one of those things. Just, you know, yes. Having like a healthy start to the day. I eat like oatmeal or a bowl of cereal or, you know, toast and some fruit. And without breakfast, I just cannot function. And it's about having, you know, 3 square meals a day, eating plenty of fruits and all that. I just find that I get really fatigued. So, yeah, I think it's really important.
And as you said, Pasha, the most important meal of the day, if you look at it from the training table standpoint, is at breakfast. Because, you know, when you think about, you know, as I was told and as I found out, it's like that breakfast turns the furnace on. You know, once you have that breakfast, it ignites the internal furnace, and that's what starts to, you know, burning the calories. And without that, it's like this delayed response. And the body, you know, if you don't eat that breakfast, it goes into the reverse effect. Then it believes you're going to starve it. Your body goes, you're starving me. So now when you eat later in the day, what it does, it soaks up all those carbs and fats because it believes that you're trying to starve it. So then, that's why you start to see people in their whole makeup. When I call it the diet craves. When they'll lose weight, and all of a sudden they'll gain weight, and they'll gain more than they started with. And it's that up and down yo-yo. And I think, as you were sharing, it's having that breakfast, starting your day off right, the right state of mind, and it just charts. It just makes the day so much manageable and better.
Yeah, especially college, you have early morning classes. That breakfast, I would like bring my breakfast to class, and that was kind of how it helped me focus.
Yes, but you know, when you're young, you don't think about that. That's, you know, you think, hey, I'm invincible. I can conquer the world. I've done it before. Let me
totally.
Just go to class. And,
totally.
And then it's later in life you start to feel the effects. Going, oh, I can't do the stuff I used to. I was telling Alan not too long ago. I said, you know, Alan, I used to could do those all nighters, man. I could step a couple of days, and I was good. And I go, if I do an all-nighter now, I'm like, I need 3 days to recuperate.
I was incapable of pulling an all-nighter in college. I didn't pull a single all-nighter. I just, like, I couldn't do it. I needed sleep. I was one of those people who was very strict about getting, like, at least 8 hours of sleep at night and then eat less, I would be very cranky the rest of the day.
Well, and that's another factor. Sleep is another one of these things in neuroscience now that it's so important, you know, for the just the kind of the rebuilding of the body and the brain, that sleep, they say sleep is very important to the whole, you know, redevelopment process.
Exactly. And it seems to, and it works, you know, in the opposite of what we used to think, where you thought, okay, you know what, we can cram for a test. All we have to do is stay up and we're going to, you know, cram all this information in. And, you know, now science has shown that not getting that sleep during that time actually worked against us. That whole concept of cramming really doesn't work. And it is much better to just get your rest, study the stuff you can.
Definitely.
In a better process. And in fact, one of the things that I remember, again, not until after college, which was, you know, sit down and read it 2 weeks in advance and then read it 1 week in advance and then read it 1 day in advance. And so that each time you'll learn, you'll gain more and more, so that then that next morning when you get plenty of rest and you get up and start studying, all of a sudden it all comes back because you've planted those seeds over a period of time.
Which they call mastery.
And realistically, the average college student isn't going to do that, but it's something wonderful to aspire to.
Exactly. Well, that's why I said I didn't figure that out until after college.
Well, and it's one of those things, too, Pasha. They call it, and I guess in the terms of terminology and in the world of education, or at least we talked about K-12, this whole thing about mastery of content, you know, it's the process. But you're right. How many is really going through the whole process of mastery? It, like, makes sense. I have a question, Pastor. How did you get, you know, other students involved, and how did you, you know, get such a wide interest by others, you know, with this whole project?
Well, I mean, it started out as, you know, a single newspaper column, and, you know, the newspaper column didn't have pictures. It was pretty hidden in the newspaper. And then I guess the big turning point was I did this piece on quesadillas you can make in the dining hall using only 75 cents of your dining dollars. And I guess it was essentially a tip on how to cheat the system and, you know, eat a full meal for 75 cents. And that column, I guess, went viral around campus, and people started reading it. And what ended up happening was dining halls made it a permanent menu item. And then they called me and they asked if I wanted to come on as a full-time consultant. So that kind of just opened up a lot of doors, and I became sort of the student liaison and intern to the dining hall administration, and took student complaints and thoughts and brought to dining halls, and I helped build the new dining halls. And, you know, slowly but surely, the new column got to be put in a more prominent place in the newspaper where more people would read it. It got photos, they dedicated a food stylist, making sure the food looked nice. You know, by the time I was over, it had a pretty nice following. One of the funniest things was I assumed a certain cross-section of campus liked it, but one time the Dartmouth football team came up to me and told me that one of my recipes, they all made it because it was, you know, high in omega-3 fatty acids, like a fish dish.
Yes.
And I was just like, I never in my wildest dreams would have imagined that the entire Dartmouth football team was reading my food column.
You know, you mentioned the quesadilla, and that was one of the recipes that I saw in the book. Share with us some of the other recipes that you came up with, and I love the fact that you added in the fact that that only took 75 cents out of your budget for food.
Yeah.
So share some of those as well, you know, with our audience. And again, and to remind our audience, these shows are all kept on answersforthefamily.com, which means you can have your teenagers, your college students, listen to the show afterwards. They can go on at any time, listen to the show, and learn some of these things, as well as buying the book.
Yeah, I mean, one that I was demoing the other day, an event that is a particular crowd pleaser. It's called a pepperoni pizza pocket, but I like to think of it as like a healthier version of a hot pocket. And basically, you just take a tortilla, put tomato sauce, cheese. You can put pepperoni. I like to put, you know, if they have it, nicer sausage, maybe some herbs and garlic powder, some fancier cheese, and then you roll it up like a kind of like a roly-poly, and then throw it in the panini press until it gets some grill marks. And then I like to cut it into three pieces, and you've got a little pizza pocket.
and it tastes just like pizza, but it's in a tortilla. You can put it in a whole wheat tortilla and make it even healthier.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Boy, it's close to lunch, and you're making me hungry, but I didn't see what happens when you start talking about food.
I also have not eaten lunch, so I am getting a little hungry myself.
Hey, well, this is a great topic to talk about it. I mean, I can go home now and make have a budget. I'm counting numbers here. I go, oh, I can go. Oh, that's interesting. Good. So I can cut my grocery bill a little. You know, taking this information.
I mean,
out.
Totally. I think one of the most shocking aspects, or not shocking, but you know, useful aspects of the book is that it's called Ultimate Dining Hall Hacks, but it really is just food hacks in general. So whether you're in a dining hall or in a small kitchen, they're, you know, super useful. Just, you know, ways to take the basic ingredients you'd find in any kitchen and transform them into something new and exciting.
Right. And the other part is that it's generally going to be healthier for you if you can use the ingredients that you want in there rather than something that has been, you know, prepared and then sold as fast food. It's not only going to cost you more, but there's going to be a lot of other ingredients that you may not have wanted in there.
Definitely. And I think something that people don't realize is that cooking at home, no matter what you're cooking, is like just inevitably going to be healthier and save you more money than eating out. Like, you don't know how much. I used to work in a restaurant, and it's like shocking how much butter goes into even, you know, the most simple grilled chicken or pasta dish. And there's just like no way that a person at home is putting that much butter into a dish, no matter how decadent they're feeling. So it's almost always going to be healthier. And that's kind of the premise of the book. You know, you're constructing the food yourself, you know exactly what's going into it. It's inevitably going to be healthier.
That butter sure does taste good, though, when it's cooked properly and whatever.
It does. And if you saw that Time Magazine article, it's good for us now. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, good point, Posh. I go, well, who's the lobbyist behind paying? You know, it's like, who's paying for it here? So it hits the marketplace. It's good, it's bad. It's good, it's bad. But, yeah, I think like you're sharing, too, though, your book, for me, what it does is just another mark of making you conscious. Having you thinking about what you are eating. And I think that's three quarters of the battle is having just being insightful.
Yeah, definitely. People don't really think about what they eat. They eat very mindlessly. They kind of grab stuff. And also it ends up, they waste a lot. Like a lot of all-you-can-eat buffets at college, people just grab a lot of stuff. They don't really think about what they're eating. They like pick at it, and then they end up wasting a lot of stuff. Nice. So in this way, you're sort of constructing a personalized meal that's exactly suited to your taste, and you're probably less likely to waste it.
And speaking of those meals, now, how do you assemble the food, and where do you actually prepare these meals? You know, I mean, I'm sort of envisioning, you know, all the different tables in the dining hall, and you have this one table with, you're pulling different ingredients out of the, you know, off the buffet or
no,
something and preparing,
I mean,
all of this.
That's not realistic for a college student.
Yeah, I know.
These can all be made on the go in a takeout container in a plate kind of thing. You just stick in a microwave for a minute, or you just, you know, assemble right there. It's not something where you grab all of these ingredients from different stations and bring them to a table and cook them, because who's going to do that? They all are designed to be made in less than 3 minutes. And I try to sort of, I did a lot of research on dining halls, where ingredients are, what kind of ingredients people have. So it's not like people are going to be running from, you know, five different stations trying to procure five different ingredients. It's a little simpler than that, a lot simpler than that.
Well, in saying that too, then, my question would be this. Have you created a calorie counting dish or dishes for students that are watching their weight?
No. My book, like I said, it does not in any way aim to be like a nutrition book or, you know, be calorie counting. I don't know if it's necessarily, I think for a college student, counting calories, I'm obviously no nutritionist, but I don't think it's wise to count calories. I think in college, as long as you're eating in a balanced, healthy way, you're living an active lifestyle, you're exercising, you're walking, you're not eating junk every night, you know, I think that's
probably fine.
So that's that, otherwise, that's the formula. That's the counting. Yes, that's it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't think any college student should really be calorie counting, but that's just me.
So share with us some of your favorite dishes.
One of my favorite dishes, one of my all-time favorite dishes that I still make is this recipe for Asian chicken lettuce wraps. I make them with chicken. You can make it with anything you want. You basically just take any grilled meat. I take grilled chicken. You take a big lettuce cup. Usually you can find in the sandwich line. You put vegetables in it. I put like bean sprouts and carrots. You put the chicken on top. You mix together some peanut butter, sugar, and soy sauce, and then sort of drizzle that on top, and then you roll it up, and it tastes just like a little Asian lettuce wrap. And I like to make a little chili sauce out of sriracha and soy sauce and dip it in there too, and it gives a little extra kick.
A little extra kick.
All right. It sounds like you may be able to start your own restaurant. You got some recipes that that would translate into you know, the combination of being healthy, but at the same time, you're setting it up to where you can make it very quickly as well, which is good, obviously, for the student on the run.
Yeah, definitely. And there's a whole section in the book about, you know, making things to-go friendly.
That's good. I just had this harebrained idea, Posh. You could name it. You could name your restaurant. I got it. I think this is it. Ultimate Dining Hall.
There you go. And
and
you can sell copies of the books there, too.
So maybe that's a future business venture.
That's right.
Although, because I live in New York and work within the restaurant industry, and I have to say it's a brutal industry to work in.
Yes, I can imagine. Well,
I was going to say, now, Priya, as we're talking about the book itself, share with us, I mean, where can people get it? I mean, is it, you know, can they get it in any store? Do you have a website that they can go to be able to get it?
It's wherever books are sold. Barnes & Noble, you go to your local Barnes & Noble, they will carry it. Amazon, they have it. I just recently returned from a book tour, and the book is available in a lot of college bookstores. So those are Barnes & Noble colleges and just local bookstores on college campuses. But it's available nationwide. So if you want it, you should have no problem procuring it.
Okay. And if anybody wants to contact you, is it best to do that through Twitter or through your website?
Yeah, on Twitter. My handle is PK Gourmet.
Okay. PK Gourmet. I like it.
I came up with it when I was in high school, and I didn't start using it until about a year ago. But I didn't want to give up the handle.
I like it.
Good. Well, as I'm thinking, and Pasha, I mean, here it is. You went to Dartmouth, and which is not a slouch of a school, you know, one of the Ivy Leagues. What did you major in?
I was a French and government double major.
French and government, parlez-vous français?
Oui. Et vous?
Oui. Et petit.
Nice.
Well, I
would have a full conversation with you in French, but I imagine our viewers at home don't speak the language, or a large majority of them don't speak the language.
I would be lost anyway, because it's been so long, you know, when everybody was in school, and everybody needed you know, foreign language to go to the university. I took French instead of Spanish, and now looking back, it might have been smarter to take Spanish, because I seem like I'm around more Spanish speaking people than I am French people. So, but anyway, you learn. But so that's good.
Now, Priya, did you?
Yeah, I mean,
What I was going to say is that, you know, by taking French, did that also maybe help you from the standpoint of your culinary choices?
Yeah, definitely. I have to say, when I started French, I kind of just took it on a whim. I was really passionate about Spanish in high school because I'm from Texas, and I loved the Spanish program in my high school, and so I wanted to learn a new language. And it was between French and Chinese, and I was like, well, Chinese required me learning a whole new set of characters, so French it is. So I signed up for French, and
you know, it ended up fitting so nicely into what my broader interest ended up being in college, but I had no idea at the time how perfect that would be. I ended up writing my thesis on food and on sort of the development of the notion of cuisine in space France. And I, you know, I took lots of classes on food. I ended up writing in both the government and the French department something like 20 papers on food, and it was so much fun. And I was really lucky to have teachers that, you know, let me write about what I wanted to write within the context of their classes.
Wow, that was great. I mean, it's kind of like it was a natural progression.
Yeah, I mean, really, it was. I wish I could say I created a 5-year plan and I achieved all of these steps along the way, but it kind of just was like all of it was really a happy accident that I kind of stumbled into.
Yes.
Yes. Now, I know we talked earlier about, you know, not skipping breakfast, which I think we all agree that's your most important meal. But let's talk about my favorite meal, and that's dessert. I know that you have some, you know, some different recipes about desserts. Share with us a few of those, and so get everybody out there that's either driving or listening's mouth watering a little bit.
Yeah, well, one of my favorite ones that I recently made for a crowd is there's two recipes for bread pudding, and one of them's chocolate bread pudding, one's apple cinnamon bread pudding. Bread pudding is not something that sounds appealing, or I'd never really heard of it until I went to one of my friend's house and her mom made it. But it's so easy to make in a dining hall, and it's very decadent. You take either pound cake or just a piece of really thick bread, you break it up into pieces, and you douse it in either milk or soy milk. You put honey over that. And then I put applesauce and cinnamon and you microwave it for about a minute until the milk soaks into the bread. And then you take a big scoop of vanilla ice cream, or I love doing like thick Greek yogurt. And then you finish it off with like a shake of cinnamon, maybe some honey. And it's so good.
Wow. Well, bread pudding is one of my favorites. So yes, I'm glad you brought that one up.
Yes.
So, and then your
delicious.
And your other favorite?
My other favorite would probably be the chocolate chip cookie dough, just because I'm one of those people, as, you know, I imagine a lot of people are, who eats raw cookie dough knowing full well that they're eating raw eggs, but does it anyways because raw cookie dough is just delicious. And this recipe has no raw eggs, and it actually is kind of healthy for you. It's basically you mix together oats or muesli, a half of a banana, chocolate chips, some peanut butter, and then any other sweeteners you want. Like I add maple syrup and maybe some cinnamon, and you just mix it together. And you can just steam it right out of a bowl, and it tastes just like chocolate chip cookie dough.
Now, I'm one of those individuals who chocolate chip dough, I never got into that one. I would nibble a little bit, but I liked it better once it was in the oven. It came out piping hot.
Yeah, you and me both.
You know,
I love it too, but I don't know. There's a special place in my heart for chocolate cookie dough. There is the Boy Scouts would come by our house and sell it in these tubs. It was so dangerous because you just had an ice cream sized tub.
Oh my god!
Filled
gosh.
With chocolate chip cookie dough in your freezer. It's like, what's the girl supposed to do?
So. Of the recipes in the book, which ones were the most popular with your other classmates?
The quesadilla was really, really popular. The pepperoni pizza pocket. I would say, as a general rule, any recipe involving melting cheese on something was incredibly popular. Recipes that for salads, I'm not a huge, I really just dislike salads generally as a thing. I don't think they're very filling. So when I came up with salad recipes, I came up with really creative out-of-the-box filling ones.
Okay.
And, you know, for a lot of college students looking to create interesting salads, I think there's such a thing called salad anxiety where you go to a salad bar and you think that you're putting together all these things that you really love, but you're just putting together things that you love but don't necessarily work together. So people really loved the salad recipes. You know, very simple, easy tips. Salad recipes that involve melting cheese on things. Those are the two categories that are the most popular.
Well, they certainly work for me. Now, from the standpoint of the future, now you have, you know, obviously, you know, you've already graduated from Dartmouth. So where do you see yourself going in the near future? What are your plans to take this information that you've gotten, obviously the book that you've written? Where does Priya go from here?
I plan to take over the world. And nice. Then after that, I'm not sure. I'm still kind of, you know, digesting this current book. You know, trying to figure out what my next move is. I think college is a period of my life that I'm really passionate about. It was kind of where I became the person I am today. Yeah. So I would love to do more things that involve college and helping college students. I'm obviously very passionate about food. I love writing about food and sharing stories and my experiences as they relate to food. And I associate memory with food very strongly. So a lot of my best memories from growing up have to do with a dish or something I ate or something involving eating. So I just love to write more and, you know, see where it all takes me.
You know, this is Marvin again. And you have a question. I mean, when I think about, I had a young man that was, I had an opportunity to mentor, and he ended up going to Dartmouth here from the West Coast. And, you know, it was a major leap for him to go from California and to never be on the East Coast, never to see snow. And he had a phenomenal experience at Dartmouth. And I just found out he graduated about 6 years ago. And he's working for a major commercial real estate company. And he just took off this past Saturday to go to Brazil to kind of head up their South American operation, a Hispanic kid. And I go, wow, just, you know, the opportunities. A bright young man, but he talks about that experience at Dartmouth. He talks about just what it did for him and how he grew as a person. And, you know, we have a lot of listeners that are parents and sometimes young teens, young adults. They're always looking at options and college and, you know, one shoe doesn't fit all. And maybe, Priya, you could talk about you know, the college experience. I mean, you know, what, you know, if a parent's listening and trying to make decisions and, you know, from your experience, I think that would be really good.
Yeah, I mean, I think that for me, I guess I'm not a good example. I chose Dartmouth because I look up to my sister and she went to Dartmouth and I wanted to do everything that she did. But I think when you're looking at colleges, it's really useful to hear other people's experiences, but the best thing you can do is just kind of go visit yourself and see if you get that experience, see if you can see yourself there. At the end of the day, if you're a person with an open mind and, you know, ideas and a desire to find your passion, no matter where you go, you'll figure it out. Sometimes I wonder if, you know, had I gone somewhere else, would I have published this book, would I have found an interest in food? And maybe I would have, maybe I wouldn't have, but I don't know. I think I would have found a passion and pursued it. And that's really the whole point of college, right?
Yeah. And I think, too, I mean, when you start to look at the differences in colleges, like, you know, you talk about Dartmouth, you know, Harvard, you know, you think about the Ivy League schools and, you know, the education that they offer. And then you look at, you know, state schools and you look at the universities, and it's just a gamut of all these higher schools of higher education. And, you know, your experience in that Ivy League environment, what did you glean from that? Or do you just think, you know, being able to find a school that you're passionate about that meets your needs is what a young person should look at?
I mean, I loved Dartmouth. I loved the community. It was such an interesting group of people, all of whom were so accomplished in their own right. I loved the professors. I loved rural Hanover, New Hampshire, and being able to go to school in one of the most beautiful cities in the world. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, you have to find what gives you that, you know, fun feeling inside. And I think one of the hardest things is having your heart set on a place and not getting in there and having to go somewhere else. But I don't know, I generally find that things tend to work out for the best. And when a college admissions officer is looking at your application, they're not only, it's not just, you know, you deciding that you're a fit for the college, but the college deciding, is our environment, is our culture a good fit for you? So it's a mutual selection process. I think people tend to forget that.
Right, right. So it's kind of that win-win, what's good for all parties.
Mm-hmm. Right. We have an email question coming in from one of our listeners, and this one reads, as a parent of an 18-year-old daughter who is going away to college soon, what should we estimate for the cost for food for the first semester?
Meal plan costs vary greatly. I mean, they can be anywhere from, $500 to the $1,500 range. It also depends on the relative rural or urbanness of the campus. I went to a very rural environment, ate at a dining hall, so just the meal plan was perfectly fine for me. And then I would spend my own money on going out to eat on the weekend. But if the person is not planning on signing up for a meal plan, I would allot, at least a couple hundred dollars a month for groceries and stuff.
Okay, and then, but that would be over and above whatever the meal plan is for that particular college. So that's what you're saying?
No, that would be if you choose not to sign up for a meal plan, which most colleges don't offer that option for freshmen, but if that is the case. If the person is going to be on a meal plan, then I would say, a couple hundred dollars a month for eating out and, groceries and cooking with their friends if they want to, maybe like $200. I don't know. I'm also a very bad point of reference because I went to school at a place that had very few grocery stores or places to eat. But if you go to school in, say, at NYU or at Penn, it's going to be a very different situation.
Situation, right.
All right. Well, again, Priya, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate all the information. Again, for the parents out there listening, you can go and buy the book to gain more information. Again, there are 75 recipes, within the book. So check it out. That might be a great gift to give your child as they go off to college so that they can see that there are more options to them.
That is true. And thank you so much for being our guest today, Priya, and, continue the great works. And, at any time, always feel free to reach out to us because we always like to hear young people doing great things. And if we can have an opportunity to spread the good news, we'd love to.
Of course. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me.
All right. And for everybody else out there, be with us again next week. And in the meantime, be good humans. Take care now. Bye.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith right here on LA Talk Radio.